Meta said today that its Hyperion campus in Richland Parish, Louisiana, will grow from a planned 2 gigawatts to 5. CNBC puts the investment above $50 billion. So picture the first conversation in town. What does 5 gigawatts look like from the road? Who builds enough generation to feed it? And what changes when one corporate project becomes larger than the place hosting it?
5 gigawatts is difficult to picture because the number belongs to the electrical system, not to anything most people encounter. Meta's announcement makes it more concrete. The plan calls for 7 new natural gas plants and 3 grid-scale batteries, with nuclear uprates and purchased power supplying the rest. The campus is bringing demand into the region at the size of a generation plan.
And it arrives with a vivid local benefit. Meta says Richland Parish teachers received annual bonuses of up to $50,000 after construction increased local sales tax receipts. Superintendent Sheldon Jones called the checks life-altering. That is a far more persuasive case for a data center than an abstract promise about national competitiveness.
It is also a benefit tied to the construction phase, which makes the timing matter. Local reporting from KNOE says eligible certified employees received full share checks of $50,935. The year before, those checks were $10,200. A sudden tax infusion can change a school district immediately. It doesn't yet tell you what revenue looks like after the cranes leave.
That distinction sits beside the permanent job count. Earlier CNBC reporting on the campus said construction would briefly employ around 5,000 people, while the completed facility was expected to create about 500 permanent jobs. Today's expansion may alter those estimates, but Meta's announcement gives a current figure of more than 1,000 jobs without breaking out construction from long-term operations.
The town is receiving a huge pulse of work and contracts, along with traffic and taxable materials. Then the campus becomes a machine tended by a much smaller workforce. That is the economic character of a hyperscale data center, and a parish deciding whether to host, one should be able to see both phases on the same page.
The company reports that it has awarded $1.6 billion in local contracts. Meta also says its new Entergy agreement should save other Louisiana customers more than $2 billion over 20 years. That comes on top of $650 million from the first agreement. The company says customers won't bear Hyperion's utility costs. Those are specific commitments, and they deserve specific accounting as the build proceeds.
The accounting needs at least 2 columns. The utility column should include generation and transmission, along with water and the equipment dedicated to the campus. The public bargain column should include the 20-year sales and use tax exemption for data center equipment, negotiated payments, roads, and services. Meta can fund the first column in full, while Louisiana still makes a consequential choice in the second.
Fortune estimated in May that the equipment exemption could exceed $3 billion, based on the earlier project size. That estimate will need another pass now that Meta has raised the campus investment above $50 billion. Meanwhile, the parish is collecting construction-related taxes and negotiated payments that have already reached teachers. You can see why a simple subsidy versus growth argument won't capture this deal.
You can also see why Meta led its announcement with teachers and local businesses. Those aren't decorative anecdotes. They answer the strongest political objection with people whose lives improved this year. The harder question comes later. Can the agreement keep producing visible public value when the hardware is installed? The equipment purchases are exempt, and the operating workforce is smaller.
There is physical disruption already. Reporting before today's expansion described dust, heavy truck traffic, and land acquisition around the site. Meta says it has invested in roads, water, schools, emergency services, and workforce programs. A 5-gigawatt campus means those local arrangements aren't incidental to the model training business. They are part of the price of making the compute exist.
And 5 gigawatts is a design capacity, not a date. Today's reporting gives no announced date for reaching the full amount. Axios says the first portion is expected to open in 2028. Regulators and crews still have to approve and build the power plants and grid connections. Server deliveries and Meta's own demand decisions will determine how quickly the campus fills.
That timing keeps me from treating the full number as current consumption. Meta has committed to a campus designed for 5 gigawatts. It hasn't said the facility will draw that amount on opening day. The announcement still matters because utilities and public agencies have to prepare around the upper bound years before the racks are filled.
There is a second timing question inside the gas plants. A data center can replace accelerators every few years. A power plant stays in the regional system for decades. Meta's demand is creating assets with much longer lives than a model generation. If compute efficiency improves, or the campus fills more slowly, Louisiana still owns the consequences of the generation choices made for it.
Meta's answer is that the agreement includes batteries, nuclear uprates, purchased power, and customer savings along with new gas generation. I think residents should get a plain public ledger, publish the costs and savings as they occur, publish the campus load as it ramps, and let people compare the promised bargain with their bills and local services.
I would add water and construction impacts to that record. The company's statement says Meta pays the full cost of the water infrastructure it uses, which is a serious commitment. Residents still experience where the water lines run, how trucks move, and what happens during drought or maintenance. Paying for an asset and living beside it are different parts of the same agreement.
Friday, we talked about AI companies buying chips, memory, and office agents. Today's Meta announcement is the physical counterpart. The model may be accessed through a browser, but 5 gigawatts has an address, a school district, a set of tax rules, and a utility commission. Richland Parish can judge this bargain because the evidence will show up in ordinary public records.
And in ordinary lives. The $50,000 teacher checks are already evidence, as are the dust and traffic complaints. The strongest version of Meta's case will include both, without asking one to cancel the other. A project this large should leave Richland Parish with durable institutions after the extraordinary construction season ends.
Phaedra's engineers presented a system that answered infrastructure questions with about 80% correctness when the equipment tree represented 64 GPUs. At 460,000 GPUs, they said correctness fell to roughly 30%. Phaedra traced the drop to a facility description that had become too large and repetitive for the search method they had built.
Their phrase for it is semantic blindness. The model can read the words for pumps, chillers, cooling loops, and sensors, but it doesn't preserve exact physical membership across hundreds of thousands of similar objects. Ask for every chiller serving a particular GPU hall, and a plausible language answer is useless if one branch is missing or one unrelated branch slips in.
The failed version tried to put enough of the equipment hierarchy in context and let the large language model search it. More equipment meant more tokens, more repeated names, and more opportunities to lose a relationship. Phaedra says the replacement keeps the model's context near 9,000 tokens, even when the represented facility reaches hundreds of thousands of GPUs.
The replacement divides the job at a very specific seam. The model converts a human request into a structured search plan, indexed trees and set operations, then resolve the exact equipment. So the model can interpret language such as the cooling equipment supporting Hall 3, while code performs the union, intersection, ancestry, and filtering needed to name the members.
I like that allocation of uncertainty. Human intent is ambiguous, and language models are useful there. Whether sensor A belongs beneath cooling distribution unit B is stored structure. Phaedra stopped asking the model to rediscover that structure from prose every time someone asked a question.
This sounds obvious after someone demonstrates it, which is usually how a good production repair feels. The tempting first version is one giant semantic interface. Describe the facility, ask the model, get an answer. The repaired version admits that interpretation and enumeration are different computations, even when they appear in one sentence from the operator.
Phaedra reports zero failures across 66 cases drawn from 6 production systems with the new architecture. Those are company results, not an independent benchmark, and the test set is small enough that we shouldn't turn zero into a universal reliability claim. It is still a strong result against the old system's collapse at scale.
The curve is the evidence. A method that looks respectable at 64 GPUs can fall apart when the same hierarchy expands to 460,000. Testing only a toy facility would have certified the wrong architecture. Their scale test exposed a kind of error that another prompt and a larger context window wouldn't necessarily repair.
It also clarifies what context engineering means in a physical system. Phaedra describes building a knowledge graph that maps sensor trends to operational assets and their physical relationships. The model receives a compact representation relevant to the query. It doesn't receive a textual dump of every sensor and then improvise the topology,
which makes the human expertise visible. Someone has to decide that a sensor belongs to a pump, that the pump serves a loop, and that the loop cools a set of racks. Phaedra says domain engineers encode those relationships and analytics. The language model makes that body of work conversational. It doesn't create the facility model from nothing.
I like Phaedra's restraint here. It isn't arguing that every agent loop should become a deterministic program. It found an exact search subproblem inside an assistant and moved that subproblem into code. The model remains in the system because operators still ask fuzzy questions and use names that don't line up neatly with database fields.
And the result can still feel intelligent to the operator. You ask in ordinary language. The system identifies the intended equipment set. Then the model can explain what it found. The magic, if you insist on using that word, comes from a well-chosen division of labor. The exactness doesn't make the interface less natural.
This is also where today's first story meets engineering without forcing a grand theory. Meta wants a 5-gigawatt campus. Phaedra works on facilities where cooling and power systems contain enormous repeated hierarchies. As those campuses grow, an assistant that drops 30% of the relevant equipment isn't a charming model quirk. It is the wrong search engine.
The narrow lesson survives the connection. A model can interpret, "Show me the chillers," but code should decide which chillers belong in the answer. Phaedra now has 66 production cases suggesting that split holds up. A published dataset or third-party replication would tell us how it behaves with unfamiliar facility schemas and messier operator language.
Nathan Lambert published an essay Sunday warning that open models may have 6 months to live under an undefined American licensing regime. He also wrote plainly that there is no official information about such a regime. That second sentence is essential. He is describing a policy risk and a direction of travel, not reporting a White House proposal.
His fear becomes legible because restrictions already exist around closed frontier models. Recent government intervention affected who could receive GPT 5.6 and how new models were evaluated before release. An open weight model can't be recalled or access gated in the same way once people download it, so officials who want comparable control need a different mechanism. Licensing is one possible mechanism.
Lambert expects any near-term action to focus on Chinese origin models and government use. Tech memes accompanying coverage points to Anthropic's campaign around alleged distillation by Chinese labs. We covered the distillation accusations in June, so the new issue today is whether those accusations become a reason to regulate distribution, procurement, or permissible use of open weights.
That distinction changes who feels the uncertainty. A federal procurement rule would affect agencies and contractors. A rule governing weight distribution would reach model hosts, startups, and researchers, along with cloud providers and anyone mirroring a repository. If nobody can say which category is under discussion, investors price the broadest plausible restriction into every open model company.
This is the strongest part of Lambert's argument. Uncertainty can alter behavior before a license exists. A company deciding whether to train an American open model has to ask whether the weights will remain distributable, whether customers can run them abroad, and whether a later rule will divide the market by country of origin. Those are expensive unknowns.
They also reward incumbents with private access systems. A closed provider already knows how to screen customers, meter usage, revoke keys, and negotiate government exceptions. An open model company earns much of its value by giving those controls up. If regulators demand the same control surface from both, the closed provider begins several years ahead.
Tang Ji, the founder of Z.ai, offered the counterposition in reporting aggregated by TechMeme. Frontier capabilities should remain broadly accessible. That is both a philosophical claim and a competitive one. Chinese labs have gained adoption through capable open releases, while American frontier labs increasingly sell controlled access, enterprise agreements, and approved distribution.
And Anthropic has a coherent incentive too. If it believes distillation transfers capabilities into models that can be distributed with fewer restrictions, it will ask policymakers to treat that transfer as a security problem. I don't think we need to assume bad faith on either side. The companies benefit from different access models, and each model carries different security costs.
The missing documents matter more than another round of rhetoric. There is no draft license in today's sources, no agency statement defining covered models, and no White House text explaining enforcement. A serious policy conversation needs thresholds and scope. It also needs review rights, treatment of research, and a definition of what happens to weights already available.
It also needs an answer for fine tunes and descendants. If a base model is licensed, does a small adaptation inherit the restriction? What about a merged model, a quantized copy, or a model trained from outputs? Open ecosystems produce families rather than a single controlled artifact. A rule written for an API release can become incoherent when applied to files people can copy and transform.
So I take Lambert's warning seriously without accepting the 6-month clock as a forecast. He has identified a vulnerable point. Policy designed around controlled frontier access could make open models second class by default. The evidence that would change this discussion is a government document saying which models, uses, countries, and distribution acts it intends to regulate.
Until that document appears, the open model community has something concrete to prepare. Definitions that match how weights move and change. If officials write those definitions only with closed labs in the room, they will inherit the closed lab's mental model of access. That alone could narrow the American open model economy without anyone announcing a ban.
Nearly 200 economists, including 15 Nobel laureates and Anthropic co-founder Jack Clark, reportedly signed a letter titled "We Must Act Now" about rapid AI-led job displacement. The signature list is the news we can verify from today's report. The primary letter and its requested policies were not present in the source set.
That makes this an institutional event before it is an economic measurement. 15 Nobel laureates don't prove that a particular number of jobs disappeared this month. They show that a large group of economists wants governments to treat displacement as a present policy problem, and Jack Clark's signature puts a frontier lab executive inside that coalition.
Yesterday, we looked at Indeed's job posting data and the concentration of new roles toward senior workers. That was measured hiring activity with plenty of ambiguity about cause. Today's letter is forward-looking concern, combining the two as if the letter confirmed the data would overstate both sources.
The policy list will reveal whether the coalition agrees on anything beyond urgency. Economists who share concern about displacement can disagree sharply about who should pay and which institutions should respond. Wage insurance and retraining address different harms. Taxes, bargaining rights, and social benefits distribute the costs differently. A title can hold a coalition together before the remedies pull it apart.
Jack Clark signed even though Anthropic sells the systems the letter worries about. His presence says at least one senior lab leader believes capability development and labor policy have to proceed together. I would like to know whether the letter asks labs to fund any part of the response.
And whether workers have a formal role. A coalition of economists and executives can model labor effects while still speaking over the people experiencing changes in workload, bargaining power, and entry-level access. The primary text may include unions or worker institutions. Today's aggregation doesn't tell us. That absence is a reason to stay narrow, not to fill in the policy ourselves.
The letter itself should supply its signatories and evidence, along with the requested actions and timetable. Until then, today's development is that concern about AI employment effects has gathered unusual institutional weight. The report provides no new labor data, and it doesn't resolve whether displacement, task change, or slower hiring is dominant.
That is enough for a short item. The signers have chosen to spend reputation on a coordinated warning, and an Anthropic co-founder joined them. Their requested policies will determine whether this becomes a durable program or a one-day headline.
Design Arena says GPT-5.6, Sol ranks first on its single-turn front-end benchmark, with an ELO score of 1353. Ploy separately says moving one production agent from Claude Opus to GPT 5.6, Sol made builds 2.2 times faster. The company also reports a 27% cost reduction. These measurements answer different questions, so they shouldn't be treated as confirmation of each other.
The ARENA result asks which model produces the preferred interface under a constrained comparison. Ploy asks whether a particular agent can finish its work faster and for less money after migration. I care more about the second for production behavior, but the first tells us Sol's design ability isn't merely hiding behind long agent loops and tool access.
Ploy's report includes a detail that makes the migration credible. The first evaluation setup favored the old model. GPT 5.6 tended to populate optional tool parameters, and its prompt caching behavior differed from Claude's. The team changed schemas and cache strategy before it obtained the reported speed and cost improvement.
That is the inconvenient part of model evaluation. Your harness contains assumptions learned from the current model, which optional fields it ignores, how it caches a prefix, how it reads files, and how much prompting it needs. Swap the model, and an evaluation can measure compatibility with those assumptions before it measures capability.
The production result still covers one agent workload. Ploy's 2.2 times and 27% don't become a market-wide price-performance ratio. They do show that a migration can improve both latency and cost after the surrounding software is adapted, which is more informative than repeating launch benchmarks.
And it gives other teams a better experiment. Run the new model against the current harness, inspect where tool behavior differs, repair assumptions that belong to the old provider, and then compare end-to-end work. The result belongs to the combination of model and harness rather than either one in isolation.
Friday's episode covered GPT 5.6 as a broad release, so I'll leave this at its proper altitude. Sol has a first-place design ARENA result, and Ploy has one production migration with meaningful speed and cost gains. More migrations will show how far Ploy's result travels beyond its agent.
The number I would ask Ploy for next is task quality after the migration, broken down by failure category. Faster and cheaper is excellent if the agent reaches the same or better result. Their account of schema repair suggests they did serious evaluation work. Publishing the error slices would make the case much easier to compare.
India's government has challenged WhatsApp's new username feature before the feature is fully available. Rest of World reports that WhatsApp began a global rollout on June 29th, allowing people to chat without exposing their phone number. The government asked WhatsApp, Telegram, and Signal to explain the cyber fraud risk by July 9th.
The product detail matters. WhatsApp still requires a phone number to create an account. A username changes contact discovery and what you reveal to another person. That can protect someone who faces harassment or political retaliation, while it can also give scammers another identity surface. The disagreement is over whether the latter justifies stopping the former before rollout.
WhatsApp told the publication that it is reserving prominent names for legitimate owners and blocking lookalike derivatives. It will limit how many new people an account can contact. The system will also prevent repeated guesses of username keys and detect common impersonation patterns. The Indian government is reviewing the company's written response. Meta hasn't said it will remove the feature.
Eva Galperin of the Electronic Frontier Foundation gave the sharp evidentiary answer. If India believes username features on Telegram and Signal produced a notable rise in cybercrime, it should make that case. The report says the government notice didn't provide such evidence. That turns a fraud concern into a dispute over the standard required to redesign a product.
Bruce Schneier put it with dry precision. Yes, WhatsApp can be misused for cybercrimes. So can email, so can your phone, so can everything. His point isn't that platforms should ignore abuse. It is that misuse is a property of communications infrastructure, and a government needs a mechanism connecting this feature to additional harm.
India has enormous leverage because WhatsApp has more than 850 million users there, according to the report. A market that large can influence the global product. If Meta builds a separate Indian version, other governments learn that feature-level concessions are technically available. If Meta refuses, it risks a fight in its largest market.
Mallory Nodal of the Social Web Foundation says usernames are a large architectural change involving contact discovery and security standards. That cuts in both directions. The government isn't asking Meta to recolor a button, and Meta can't plausibly say the feature has no security consequences. The dispute needs evidence proportional to the requested redesign.
Usernames also provide a privacy gain that disappears if every first contact reveals a phone number. A journalist, organizer, creator, seller, or person on a dating app can separate a public contact identity from a durable real-world identifier. Treating pseudonymity as inherently suspicious makes privacy available only to people who never need to meet anyone new.
The article notes that India is objecting to a design before the alleged harm occurs and asking the companies to justify it to the government's satisfaction. Apar Gupta of the Internet Freedom Foundation says, "No law authorizes that demand. The government's legal basis and requested remedy are therefore as important as its fraud claim."
This is mainly an encryption and platform governance story, so I wouldn't drag it into the open model licensing argument. It stands on its own. A national government has challenged how a global private messaging product introduces people to one another, and Meta has answered with design mitigations rather than agreement to withdraw the feature.
The government's next response should identify the remedy. Stronger anti-impersonation controls would differ from a delayed rollout. Removal of usernames would go further still. Each request creates a different precedent. Until India names that remedy and its legal authority, this remains a demand for product control without a public demonstration that the feature caused the harm.
And that document will be specific enough to judge. It can answer whether India is asking for evidence, a delay, or a market-specific redesign. For now, we know the government challenged a privacy feature before rollout, and Meta responded with concrete abuse controls, LINAR.